everyone, and welcome back to the Disney Breakdown. I'm Caro.
And I'm Maya. And we're two American friends on opposite coasts who love to break down
and break down over
Turkish TV shows.
It's good to be back, Maya.
I know, we're back. It's been a while.
It's been a while for our listeners, but we chat daily.
So. We do chat every day, and it makes my life every time I get a voice message.
Likewise, we do voice messages, and it makes all my driving time feel less because I enjoy listening to Maya talk about our Disney shows.
Same. It's really funny because you'll look at our text threads, and we mainly use texting for voice messages, so Our threads will often be just 15 to 20 minute voice messages back and forth on the days after or during an episode, and it's great.
True. But yeah, no, it's good to be back, and we're excited to try out our new microphones. We both have the same microphone now, so fingers crossed the sound quality will improve.
Yeah, let us know what you think. When we originally started this podcast, we're going to be like, it's really low pressure. We'll just get some mics. We'll see what happens. Mm-hmm. And I think that us having the same mic and a mild upgrade will make our episodes a little easier to edit and hopefully more enjoyable to listen to.
Absolutely.
So one thing before we dive fully back in to talking about disease, I just wanted to take a moment to acknowledge the earthquakes that affected Turkey and Syria on February 6th and beyond. Mm-hmm. It feels weird not to acknowledge that, especially since we gain so much entertainment, at least personally, from their shows and their content.
Yes. Our hearts went out to everyone affected by it. It's just a terrible tragedy.
We just wanted to take a minute to mention that before we continue on, since we haven't recorded since that happened.
Absolutely. It's been a while since we did our last one, and now, can you believe that summer Disney season is almost upon us?
I really can't believe it. I feel like winter and spring flew by, and yet we're so long, so I have no idea where I am in time. But I know you know, because summer Disney season is your favorite time of the year.
It's my Super Bowl, basically. Yes. I actually have not heard much about the summer shows. Maybe I'm not paying close enough attention. Like, I think I heard ATV is going to have one. I personally don't care about TRT1. Those Dizzies, they're not even allowed to kiss on, and I respect their decision, but that's not my jam for a rom-com. I want to see the smooches.
Yeah, I really haven't seen much either. I've seen a few Dizzy Law posts about potential pairings, but they're not actors I've ever heard of, and not to say that I know every single Turkish actor, but I feel like after a few years of doing this, I know quite a lot, and I at least know of people who are important in the industry. So if it's a bunch of newcomers, it'll be cool to see how they go, but I wonder if they're holding off on show announcements for whatever reason, so...
I know. It'll be interesting to see how it goes, but I'll certainly be watching. I mean, I don't know how many. Usually I pick like one or two, because you know me, I love a good binge. And once I get into a show and I get addicted to it, the week to week is very hard for me because I have absolutely no patience. But we'll see. I'm looking forward to it.
But I need you to, not to change you or anything, but it's so hard when you are, but it's so hard when you're hoarding the episodes, but I'm watching week to week and I'm just super excited in the moment. I'm like, Caro, please watch four episodes. You're like, but they're so long. It's like, I know, but by the time you catch up, I might not care anymore.
No, I love when you get excited about it because I trust your judgment, especially with rom-coms, because you are a hard judge for rom-coms. It has to be good for Maya to like it. It has to be quality, I should say, for Maya to like it. I'll watch almost any rom-com trash, but Maya will not. Like when you recommended Ashmantic Intikam, you were like, you have to watch this. And I was like, ugh, all right. And then what happened, Maya? Please tell the audience what happened.
Well, I will say that I finally got you on board and you finally caught up just as the show went downhill and did a number on us and our psyches. The emotional damage was high and I jumped ship.
And you jumped ship. And I stayed on until the bitter end. It did end well. It ended well. But man, it was a struggle to get there.
Yeah, and for me, once a show fully breaks my trust, even if it writes itself eventually, I just can't do it. I remember the nonsense, so even if the ending kind of makes sense, I'll be like, it could have been so good and you messed with it. So I think that's just gonna be the burden I have to bear for as long as I watch Disease.
A lot of summer Dizzies, I think, are better as a binge. I mean, I've said this before, and I said it in our last episode for Kyrillic Ash, that I don't know if I would have liked the show as much if I watched it week to week. But binging it? Chef's kiss.
Obviously, you haven't heard from us in a while, but we have still been watching Dizzies. Turkish TV is still very much a big part of our lives. Though I feel like this year I haven't been watching a ton consistently. The main one that I've been soldiering on with alone is Gelsen Hayat Bildi Gibi.
I watched some of it.
You did watch some of it. And I will confess that I'm maybe 4 or 5 episodes behind right now.
Mm-hmm.
But part of that is because it's such an excellent, I don't know how else to say, like a mid-level show. There's action, there's drama, but at the same time, it's very heartfelt. For some reason, I want to say it's kind of a family drama because the show has elements that could appeal to pretty much any kind of Dizzy watcher. But the one thing that I do like about it is that the plots are never so high stakes. I feel like I watch a very hardcore drama that's really well made and I'll have to sit and digest it and I'll feel all these emotions. This one, I feel like I can take a back seat and just have a good time and feel good.
Mm-hmm.
And it is easier for me to skip through some of them. So I can sit down and binge a couple episodes at a time because I watch them in maybe an hour instead of 2.5.
I like that you called it a mid-level show because that makes a lot of sense. And I think for me, that's the deterrent because it's not that it's a bad show. It's really good. And I really liked the two leads and their kind of budding chemistry. I think I've made it, I don't know, 4 episodes conservatively. Because it's something that I would want to like be texting or playing a game or painting my nails, cooking dinner, doing something else while it's on, I can't because there's subtitles. Do you know what I'm saying? So for me, it doesn't grab me in the way that I want a Dizzy to grab me. So I'm fully focused on the subs and reading it and understanding what's going on. I would find myself not paying attention and then being like, wait, I just missed everything that happened.
Yeah, that makes sense. But I do still really like it and would recommend it.
Agreed. It is a good show. It's a me thing. It's not a dig on the show. The show is very good.
And honestly, there hasn't been a ton else that I've been watching. I did recently start Zeytin Arch, or as Netflix calls it, Another Self. I've really only watched 2 episodes of it a couple weeks ago, and I'm not loving it personally, so who knows if I'll go back to it. My initial thought was, ooh, something short, something Netflixy to check off, and
they added a new season, didn't they?
Did they?
They renewed it for season 2.
I mean, fine. I mean, I don't know how it ends.
That's the one with Tuba, correct?
It is.
Yeah.
Interesting. I mean, good for them. I'm glad those actors have jobs, but also...
Yeah, Tuba's really struggling. She's like the most famous actress in Turkey, but okay.
Come on, let me have this one.
I'm just kidding.
But, you know, it was fine. And then briefly, lastly, right now, the Seattle International Film Festival is going on. And it's actually a pretty big film festival. And I've been trying to go to as many movies as I can in this short period of time. And I did manage to go to the one Turkish film that is representing this year, Kar ve Ay, or Snow and the Bear. And I thought that was pretty good. It's pretty cool. It's pretty unique. Very much a darker drama, small town situation, which is not the vibe you often get in Dizzy's. But I thought I'd mention that. Because I love Seattle International Film Festival, love Turkish things. And we do have the Turkish Film Festival in the winter, but it was cool to see this one now.
That's exciting.
But yeah, that's really all I have to catch up on at the moment. Carol, what about you? I know you've been watching a little more. What have you been watching lately?
Yeah, so Maya and I, honestly, we've been like diverging in our shows that we watch. I have been watching, and for the most part, really liking Yala Chepkina. I hesitate when I say that because I think it's a hard show to love. I mean, it's super popular. It's like almost number 1, if not maybe 2 in the ratings every week. But the plot doesn't move as fast as I would like it. So again, like this is kind of a show that I will watch at a higher viewing speed because you can get the gist of what's going on. You know, you don't have to really watch the entire episode frame for frame. That said, though, I love the main actors. I love the two leads. I think their chemistry is really good. I'm rooting for them on the show. It just hasn't progressed quite as much as I would like, but I do like it. I enjoy it. I watch it for the most part every week. I took a small break when things really went off the rails a few weeks ago, but then I saw the promos and things seemed like it was getting back on track, so I went back to it. I also recently started Gulchimal, which I love. It is a adaptation of Beauty and the Beast, which is funny because so was Siyabaya Ashk. That was kind of an interpretation of Beauty and the Beast. That's why I love the show and I really got into that. Plus, you can't really deny the chemistry between Berger and Ibo. That was just aces. But I'm really liking it. I'm on episode 4. I don't know how quickly I'm going to be able to watch the coming episodes. I've started downloading them to my iPad just in case I travel or things like that, I'll be able to watch it. But I'm going to stick with it. I really like it. I like the cast. I like the chemistry. It's just very much a literal interpretation of Beauty and the Beast. There's a clear villain. She's being held captive. He initially kept her father, and in exchange for the father, she stayed there. Very, very close to the Disney version of Beauty and the Beast. Not a complaint. I really like it. It's a very good show. Since Maya doesn't watch it, if anyone listening watches it, please chat me up on Twitter because I need people to talk about it with.
I'm not opposed to starting it eventually. I think I just am trying to get all my TV shows in order, and I kind of want to watch some non-Turkish shows at some point.
Why? No, I'm just kidding.
Honestly, though, no, I just feel like there are some shows I would like to dive into, but I feel like anytime I sit down, I was like, oh no, I have a Turkish show. I want to make sure I stay caught up. So, Gülçemal, I'll see how it progresses. I've only heard a little bit about it. I haven't heard anything bad. So, I think I'll give it a little longer to see if it sticks around.
Yeah, I don't blame you. And again, it's also kind of an easy watch. I think I would put it towards the mid-level show. It's not must-see, which is why I'm saving some episodes up, but it's very entertaining and I do like it when I watch it, but it's not to the level of like our top-tier shows, which I think we should get into my current top-tier show. I think it's your number 2.
It is.
Correct? And that is Adam Farah.
Adam Farah.
I'm not allowed to talk about the most recent episode because somebody, and I won't name names, has not finished it yet.
I feel like you're one to talk because every other week it's me having to sit on my hands for multiple days waiting for you to catch up. And the one time I decide not to start a Dizzy episode at 11 p.m. when I have the time.
I started it at 1:30 this morning.
Yeah, well, you'd slept already.
I did. I'd already gotten a REM cycle in.
You woke up in the middle of the night. You're like, they haven't sent the Adam Farah. And I sent it to her. It's like, okay, I'm going to watch it now.
The best part about having a friend on the opposite coast is that I can fall asleep at 10 o'clock when I normally fall asleep, get up in the middle of the night, as I often do, message Maya about whatever I'm watching to lull myself back to sleep, and she'll respond, even though it's 2 in the morning. But yeah, personally, it's my number one. I'm very obsessed with Adam Farah. I'm very obsessed with Engin and Demet and their characters that they're portraying. I think they're knocking it out of the park.
It's such a good show.
Yeah.
And this is probably my favorite interpretation of both those actors on screen so far. Granted, I haven't seen a lot of either of their main work that they're super famous for, but they're really knocking this one out of the park.
I mean, Engin was fantastic in Black Money Love.
I know.
He was really good in that. And that's why, like, honestly, before you watch Gülçemal, I think you would like Black Money Love more. I really think that's something that ticks your boxes for a Dizzy. And it's on Netflix. It's so easy. Good subtitles. I couldn't stop.
Oh, I really want to watch it. I just know there's a bunch of episodes. I think there's like 54 episodes. I'm kind of waiting until Adam Farah goes on its summer break.
That's fair.
So that I'm not watching Engin playing a good guy and a bad guy at the same time in different
shows.
He's
not a bad guy.
He's not. I love him in Adam Farah. And
he's a muffin. He is like a little cinnamon roll full of sweetness.
The man is traumatized. Like, he's great.
Who isn't? Find me a man that isn't traumatized. No, he is. He's got some serious trauma. He's got some serious trauma. I give him that. That episode where Mehmet stops him from playing Russian roulette with himself. I didn't expect the show to really go there, and I loved it. Engin knocked it out of the park.
Such a good episode. And I will say, like, even though it's an adaptation of The Cleaning Lady, which is an American show, I think it does a really good job of leaning into all the Dizzy characteristics that make shows so addicting.
Mm-hmm.
And they've made this very tightly knit web of characters where every single character is connected mostly to the families involved, which has allowed almost every scene and every character interaction to feel important and needed, versus some shows like this would have a bunch of side characters and different plots going on that we wouldn't care about as much because they aren't connected to the main plot. This one, everything is connected, which makes it so intense.
And every character has a motive. There's not the evil stepmother or the evil mother that's angry for no reason or hates the wife for no reason.
Right.
There's a clear motive behind every character's actions. So even if they're bad, I can understand them. And I like that. To me, that means something. And that helps me appreciate the characters more, enjoy watching them more. The ratings went down for last night's episode, and I was heartbroken because I love this show. If you follow me on Twitter, you'll know that all I do is just repost the beautiful gifts people post because I just love it so much.
I'm so shocked that this one doesn't get higher ratings.
I don't understand it. It's so interesting to watch. It's moving at a nice pace. Things are happening. I don't watch the show at a higher speed at all because every single part of the show I'm interested in. I'm not bored at all. The 2.5 hours go by in the blink of an eye.
It's so good.
And there's only one other show that I can say that about. And I think that brings us into our episode today.
It does. So this is a first for us. Mm-hmm. We are doing a part two on a show that we have covered before, which just so happens to be my favorite Dizzy of all time, Yarga.
Yarga! Season two.
This episode, we're going to focus just on season two. So if you'd like a rehashing of the general plot or some of the main characters, please go check out episode 5, where we covered season one and the show in a more holistic way. And that starts about the 9-minute mark. But even before 9 minutes, I feel like we banter about. It's a fun episode.
And there's probably some of me ranting about Ash, Mantic, and Tecumseh. So that's always fun.
You know, there's some traces of that everywhere.
You know, I like to sprinkle it in every single episode.
It did a number on us. Yeah. We're still talking about it today, so.
That's my trauma.
Since our season one episode, the Golden Butterfly Awards of 2022 have also happened, where Yarga took home 5 different awards, one for best show for Yarga. Inarin Khan respectively got best actress and actor. Ali Bilgin, our director, got a win, as well as our beloved writer, Sema.
Sema.
So it was really cool to see the team acknowledged in that way for a show that is just so well made and objectively great.
It's so well deserved. As we already know, Yarga airs on Canal D and is produced by iYapim. Season 2 premiered on September 18th, 2022, which feels like a very long time ago. It ran for 29 episodes, which makes it a total of 63 episodes.
Good for them.
Good for them. And the finale just recently aired on May 7th, 2023. Which is why we wanted to do this episode now while it's fresh in our memories. And hopefully it'll be fresh in your memories too, so you can follow along with us.
Yeah. So first off, just talking about how season two operates as a season, I will say that in so many ways, Sema did knock this season out of the park. It was still really well crafted compared to season one. And it was honestly better than I expected in terms of her finding big enough plots to keep us interested for so long, especially at the beginning.
Yeah, I mean, I think that she definitely had her work cut out for her starting in season two, knowing that it was just supposed to be a one season show. And given that fact, she did a great job.
She did a great job. But unfortunately, as every Dizzy is likely to do, there were still some weak plot arcs. But I think part of that is because they were more recent and she didn't have as much time to fully map out the season as she did in season one, which she had a lot of time to work on and fine tune before it got on air.
Mm-hmm.
There were a few plots that did drop off or kind of go away unexpectedly, but it stands really strongly as a season, I would say.
A lot happened. I feel like more happened in season two than season one.
Yeah, I think so too. I think part of that is that some of the plots appeared more suddenly, I would say, where in season one, everything kind of hinged on itself and one plot would be trickling off as a new plot started to build up. And this one had a bit more of, all of a sudden, here's a problem that we're going to have to solve over the next 5 to 10 episodes.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't really fault it for that.
No.
I feel like because season one ended on such a cliffhanger with a 6 month later timeline, which Kara and I both for months were like, it's been more than 6 months on the show at this point. Where is it?
Yeah, I was very surprised as well. I really truly thought that given how season one ended, I kind of thought that it would be at least sprinkled throughout season two to be like, hey, don't forget, we've got this coming up. But it was not. And it actually didn't even happen until the very end of season two. That was not my favorite part of this season, because it felt like a dark cloud hanging over an already dark cloud of a season. Like, there weren't many happy moments. There wasn't a lot of joy. It was a lot of trauma and a lot of pain and a lot of heartbreak and a lot of stress for our characters. Also, always knowing that, like, oh, well, you know, Ilgaz is apparently dead and Jaylen's hiding the knife and Eren's gonna arrest her. Knowing that was coming, it's like, oh, great. So all this stuff's going on. And then we have this to look forward to.
Though I will say, I am kind of glad that we didn't deal with that first, because I feel like if we'd started season two jumping 6 months later, any plot that followed that, if it followed, wouldn't have felt as dire, because we've already gotten to what could potentially be the worst thing to happen to them.
True.
I don't know how we would follow that.
True.
Do I think we should have had a bit more time with that plot at the end of the season? Yes, but we can talk about that later.
So basically, it led to a very segmented season, in my opinion. A lot of things felt very last minute. It's hard because you only have season one to compare it to, which Sema had, what was it, Maya, 2 years to create. And that's really hard. It's not fair, I should say, to compare season one to season two. But we're going to do it anyways.
And I will say, the fact that Sema got 2 years while getting the show off the ground and all the background logistics, I'm so happy that that happened because I don't know if it really made an impact industry-wise, but at least as a viewer, it's really nice to see what could happen. Because as impressive as I find the Dizzy production timelines to be, I think it was so cool to see a show that had the time to percolate and really find its footing before it went on air. And I felt like that elevated the story and the show as an entity. So I'm really glad we got to experience that, but it does make a follow-up season in the more traditional Dizzy timeline a little hard to stomach when we know how it could be.
Agreed. And a lot happened in season two. Season one, like Maya mentioned earlier, really had one big plot that slowly bled into another one. Season two seemed to have a lot more plot arcs. If you guys remember, it started off with Barak and the well murders and Neva being a victim of the well murders. It was a strong opening with a really good mystery. It reminded me of a Criminal Minds episode, which I really like. I love a good true crime story. So for me, I was like, ooh, this is exciting. Like, I like this. And then, you know, it brought in Jaylen being kidnapped and her going down into the well. And then the reveal that Barak was actually a serial killer. Luckily, she survived. Ilgaz and team save her. But then that leads to Ilgaz losing his job when he goes after the serial killer.
He's put under scrutiny for Barak's death. Because Barak was a new character this season who was originally introduced as this journalist, and he was making nice with Chanar, which was frustrating because Chanar cannot make smart friends.
He's a magnet for bad people.
Yeah. So it was interesting to have this reveal where we have this very charismatic character that we're curious about, and suddenly the switch of, oh, he's been causing all of these terrible events to happen right under everyone's noses.
And then it leads into Surtur's death, which happens around episode 10, episode 9, 10.
Finally!
I know, but it led to so much chaos.
It really did. For a character who was kind of a wet blanket to be around in season one.
Borderline street rat to lead to this much chaos.
He made an impression on the show.
Yes, he really did. That led to just a spiderweb of issues happening. There's the new character, Haluk, who is actually Barak's grandfather. And Yekta, being Yekta, leans in really hard to pin the death of Barak on Ilgaz at Haluk's request, because Haluk is so mad that Ilgaz killed his grandson that he just wants him to suffer at any cost.
Yeah. And we'll remember that Haluk, eventually it'll come to light that he has mafia ties and is very well connected, as well as being unable to process the fact that his grandson might be a little bit evil, and it turns out his grandson is a lot evil.
And Surtur's death just really, like, the whole way that he died, it was a group event. And for a while, we didn't even know who done it, because there was the whole group. There was Parla, there was all of the teens, there was the Urguvans. There was just a lot of people against this one guy. And it just became this big event where all of our protagonists are trying to protect each other. No one really wanted to say who actually murdered Surtur. And it comes out that it was actually Parla, who is the one that gave the final blow.
Yeah.
And then begins a new storyline, which kind of comes out of the blue, which was the bride that was found dead on her wedding day. And that opens up the can of worms. First of all, there's the whodunit. And then it turns out that the whodunit also has to do with bringing in the Balkan Mafia and the Balkan Mafia plot. And the Balkan Mafia has ties to Haluk. So that also brings in Maya's favorite character, Omar.
Yeah, there is that. Omar comes into play part of the way into this season. He is introduced as Yekta's potential long-lost son, which already is a plot I don't like when, you know, we're far enough into a show and they're clearly trying to add a character. They're like, oh yes, my long-lost so-and-so.
I'm never gonna support a surprise baby, even if the baby is 30 years old.
But the thing is, that happened with Tuche and that was great, but I know that that's not a plot you like.
It wasn't at first. It grew on me. But I still have PTSD from Gilmore Girls, and I'm never gonna like the surprise baby.
And that's not to say that I dislike plots where new characters mysteriously appear, but those have to be set up from the beginning. Even if a long-lost character appears, the main character already has to be in this questioning situation. When it comes out of the blue, where it's outside of the initial kind of general main plot, that's always just messy, and it often unties groundwork that earlier episodes have laid.
Mm-hmm.
So I usually am not about that. Omar, I didn't hate his introduction as much, but I did dislike that it did feel like a repeat of Engin in a way, where Yekta had this other son and just kind of filling a void that Engin left.
Mm-hmm. He fit too perfectly. He was introduced into Yekta's world too easily, in my opinion. Like, okay, he is a lawyer. Okay, he's really smart. Okay, Yekta brings him on as basically his partner, and the two of them just keep their own agenda. And really, until the very end, we did not know what Omar's motivation was. We didn't know why he was blindly following Yekta and doing what he was doing. Omar is a big issue that I have with season two.
I think for me, my biggest issue was the fact that we didn't know what his deal was for a very long time. So anytime he would be majorly involved in a plot, we could never think, ooh, maybe he's helping the good side secretly, or oh, he's truly evil. And that kind of gray area, which I know was left to be suspenseful to viewers, I feel like that dragged on a bit too long for it to really make that impact.
So now the Mafia is involved, and the Mafia has an agenda against Ilgaz because Ilgaz was prosecuting one of their own who was involved with the dead bride. And that just brought a slew of issues. Ilgaz's car got blown up. They were threatening notes. Poor Daphne got kidnapped. Metin got stabbed. Poor Ridvan died. Pars was murdered. Ozgi is in prison. I mean, everything was bad. Like, literally, you pick a character on the show and they're miserable. I'm sorry, you pick a protagonist on this show and they're miserable. At this point of the show and of the season, nobody's happy except Omar.
And he might be a sociopath, so his emotional range is still in question.
Right. So season two ends with Ilgaz's death, quote-unquote death. Turgut Ali's motive for quote-unquote murdering Ilgaz being his daughter's illness, which I did like that they at least put in a motive for his evilness. And Jaylen being framed for Ilgaz's murder, which is the 6 months later plotline. We arrived. Surprise.
So, as we do every time we talk about a show on this podcast, we're going to start off by talking about what the show does well, which is a lot. Mm-hmm. And I want to say there is a reason it is my favorite Dizzy of all time. It's so well made. It's so intelligent. There's so much that I love about it. Season two has this excellent beginning with this very inventive and enthralling new plot. You know, the well murderers. We transition out the character of Neva, having her be the most prominent victim of this initial case that our squad has to solve.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think was really well done, especially since Neva wasn't going to stay on the show, because that's not the direction Sema wanted to go. But her death gave a very strong reason for all of the protagonists to care about the case outside of it just being a tragic part of their work. And it motivated Parse, especially since the show opens with a new Bashsavje, a role that Parse and Ilgaz have been vying for, I'm going to assume, all of their careers. And it goes to Parse. And I think he's the perfect character in the show for it to go to, mainly because Ilgaz has so many other side quests he has to go on against his will sometimes.
Yeah, he's a busy guy.
He's a busy crazy guy, and Jalen's maybe a security risk for him if he's speaking for a high percentage of the country. So I think it was a really good narrative choice that Parse got that role. And so having Neva's death be tied to this huge case really kicked him into gear, and it tested him in his objectivity and ruthlessness in going after cases when he had a personal connection to it.
And kudos to Mehmet for his acting during his grief of Neva. It was very well done.
Oh, Mehmet. So good. I miss him dearly.
I miss you, Memo.
Season 2 also does a good job of what Season 1 focused on, which is the themes of justice. No matter the case or the episode, Sema has found ways to integrate in modern Turkish social issues, making commentary for viewers and bringing light to issues that some shows don't really focus on. You know, there's the rights of women and violence against women, especially femicide, unfortunately, is a big problem in Turkey and highly publicized. Mm-hmm. She includes all these little moments of acknowledgement and support of the Turkish Republic and how strong they are as a country, but also in the wave of the current political turmoil happening right now. And I think it's really cool that a show with a title that literally means justice, judiciary, makes sure that they comment on those things happening in modern Turkish life.
And for me, being the rom-com lover, what the show does really well, obviously, is chemistry. Between the squad, between the cast members, but most importantly, Khan and Pinar to create Ilgaz and Jalen is just absolutely insane. I'm forever grateful that Sema saw them in Aşk 101 and was like, yes, these are my people. So yeah, so for me, the casting is really good. I mean, even characters like Yekta, who I dislike, you can just tell that he gets along with the cast. Like, I can see why Sema keeps him on the show, because I feel like he's probably just hilarious off screen, you know? Like, he just seems like he gets along with everyone. And I love that. I love that this cast seems to love each other. Whether or not they do, who knows what goes on behind closed doors, but it seems like they all get along. They gel really well. I love it. Like, I love the friendships on the show, the four horsemen of the apocalypse, per se. Sema in the scripts, the squad, as Maya calls them. You root for them. It's more than just Ilgaz and Jalen being the protagonist. You've got Daria, you've got Pars, you've got Eren, and we root for them. They're all our main characters. They all have main character energy.
They do, and that's just another nod to Sema about such strong writing, is no matter how big or small the character, they have a backstory. Whether or not we as viewers get to really dive into it, it changes depending on the character. But we know that that's there for every single person. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really cool. Season 2 also had many different parallels to scenes in Season 1, whether it be dialogue, whether it be just cinematography. There are some scenes you could play right next to each other and they parallel each other. Sometimes they're the same to show that characters are still the way they are. Some of them are different to show how characters have grown. And I thought it was really cool that those were worked in. There were times when it was a bit too many where it's like, okay, in Season 1 we kind of talked about this. Do we need to talk about it again? But I enjoyed the effort and how intentional that was in the cinematography.
Yeah, absolutely. It's nice to have that thread that always runs through Yargit. Like, I appreciate that.
But moving on, there are also things that the show does not do well, much to my disappointment. And I will say, I think a lot of this isn't necessarily Sema's fault, but as we've said before, there were places where the writing did deteriorate because she didn't have 2 years to really hash out plot threads and kind of see them through to the end. Mm-hmm.
So Maya, tell me, what was your number one least favorite aspect of Season 2?
So, as Caro knows intimately, I am violently opposed to this back and forth LJ divorce plot. A second divorce? I already had a hard enough time with Season 1, where LJ got brought to the brink of divorce and the papers actually got signed. And I will say, Sema handled that very well because they signed the divorce papers, they feel terrible, and then plot circumstances put them together back in the exact same car driving to work like 10 minutes later. Incredibly done. But with a couple as strong as LJ is and how they are so much each other's person and how well they work together, even for all their differences, it felt kind of cheap to then have another problem throw them back into divorce. Because especially at the beginning of the second season, we saw how they'd grown into their marriage, how well they worked together.
They were happy.
They were happy. They were learning from each other. Jalen was kind of toning down her recklessness. Ilgaz was expanding his understanding of people's motives instead of just the black and white of the law. But then they got back to a second impending divorce with a plotline that was drawn out really long. And it was pretty disappointing because it felt like the characters had made it so far and they learned to communicate and it was so good. And then there was all this angst about, oh, we'll get divorced, we'll never see each other again. And because they'd done that two times, it felt like such a waste. I think it made sense a little bit because of the nature of how they had their marriage of convenience at the beginning of the show, that there would be some turmoil and that they would need to make a more permanent decision together when they had become romantically involved. But by the time they got to the second divorce plot, there were other characters on the show who were starting to reference LJ as this on-again, off-again couple. Like, oh, who knows where they are right now? And that's not who they are. And I know that the plot wanted to include a bit of relationship drama, but a plot like this gets one potential divorce max.
Yeah, I just don't think it needed it. It's silly, and I don't use this word lightly, but it's silly given how they're clearly soulmates. There's no other person that the other's interested in or going to be interested in. There's so many other things going on in their lives. It's not necessary. I mean, I get that maybe you want it for like a plot point to get from A to B, but I don't think there's one viewer of Yarga that was like, oh my god, they're divorced, they're gonna stay divorced. Everyone knew it was temporary. Everyone knew it was just a plot device. So I was not a fan of it as well.
I think it was also hard because there was a small part of me thinking that they'd actually go through with it for the angst. And in season one, there were so many moments where I could trust that Sema would not go that far. In another show, maybe it would have worked really well having an on and off couple like that. But for me, and I think for everyone, that's not who Iljay are at their core. So it was kind of hard to watch those episodes.
Agreed.
And while there are other things I could touch on similarly, my main other issue I had with this season is Chanar. Chanar still has not grown as a person, and it has been 63 episodes. The beginning of season one saw him go through all of this turmoil and all of these hardships. Blame was placed on him, he got his name cleared, all of these things, and yet he continues to make mistakes and bring negative plot points back into the show without having grown. And it's so frustrating to watch because I want him to be redeemed. He doesn't have to be, you know, the best character ever, but I would love to see some growth and some repentance almost. But I want to see him move on with his life instead of just messing around like he has, when he can clearly see how hard Ilgaz and Jalen and his dad are all working to bring justice to the world and make society better, and he still has to be so entitled and problematic. And it's kind of frustrating.
Nobody's perfect, but Chanar brings boneheadedness to another level. I mean, he can't make a right decision to save his life. It literally just seems that every time Chanar does something, he makes things worse. Do you remember the scene where he was like, I want to be a police officer? My first thought was, oh dear God, no. Like, Istanbul has struggled enough. Like, they do not need Chanar as a police officer. Please don't do that.
Yeah, and he'll get so upset when Ilgaz will be like, stay in the car. He'll get so upset that he's not involved, especially in plot lines that involve bad things happening to his family. And as viewers, we're sitting there watching him. It's like, when Ilgaz told you to sit next to your dad at the hospital after he'd been stabbed, you couldn't even do that.
No.
You sat still for about 10 minutes and let the other teens just hang out at the hospital where you went and made a bigger mess. Like, you can't complain about being excluded from legitimate police and government work,
right,
when you can't even do the basic thing and follow directions that those officials have given you.
Agreed. And this ties into my number one least favorite character, who is Parla. Her and Chanar together as a couple on the show is just a chaos duo. They are the gruesome twosome. I just dislike everything about them. They do nothing but bring everyone around them down while they're in their own little world of like, yay, we do whatever we want. And they're literally that person in a burning house being like, this is fine, but they've caused the fire. like, I don't know how else to describe it. She is such a terrible character. She's so selfish. She never thinks of literally anybody except herself. I think she thought of Metin once, but it was really just to make herself feel better because she got him shot. So I have no sympathy for Parla. I never feel bad for her. It's very hard to sympathize with Jaylin, who cares so deeply about Parla. I mean, I get it. Parla's her niece. But at some point, Jaylin has to realize that Parla is doing nothing but making her life more complicated. I mean, she literally caused the divorce number two. Like, that was Parla that instigated that happening. You know, like, my blood pressure is rising just talking about her. Like, that's how frustrating she is to me.
Yeah, she was so frustrating. And that also made it harder for Jaylin's plots to have as much impact, because we know that Jaylin has a good heart and that she would sacrifice for the people she loves. But when the plots kept involving Jaylin lying to Ilgaz or putting herself in danger because of Parla, it made it so much harder to sympathize with her and want Jaylin to succeed, because we'd seen Parla kind of skipping around or having her little panic attacks. And not to belittle anyone who has anxiety or panic attacks, but the chokehold that Parla has on everyone around her, of treating her like she's made of glass, is so frustrating.
And not to beat a dead horse, but what really sealed the deal for me was in the finale when Jaylin is losing her absolute mind because she thinks Ilgaz is dead. Everyone is upset. Parla asks if Ayub died because she thinks she killed him. So she asks Daria whether or not Ayub is dead, and she says no. Everyone's miserable, crying. Jaylin's borderline hysterics and should be in a straitjacket over her grief. Parla's smiling because she's happy she didn't kill someone.
Yeah.
I was like, you are a selfish little girl.
So tired of that girl.
I'm over it. We're moving on. I can't talk about Parla anymore.
That was the other thing about this season is, yes, Yharga is a drama. Yes, it touches on hard-hitting topics. Yes, there's lots of angst and pain, and I love it. But with this season, too many bad things would happen back to back to back with no room to breathe, no way for us to get our footing narratively, for the characters to have a moment. It would be deaths and kidnappings and angst. It was just an onslaught. And sometimes they would happen within, you know, 48 hours, and it would be four episodes of just terror and angst and drama. And then the villains would feel good, and the villains would make headway. And we're just sitting here like, give us a moment to process.
Give the characters a break. Give the protagonists a break.
Yeah. And sometimes, honestly, even when they did give them a break, it would be in the middle of this chaotic, terrible scenario. Like, Jaylin and Ilgaz go to Cappadocia on this random romantic vacation, and they can't even enjoy it because it's in the thick of all of these hard things happening. And it was great that they went to Cappadocia. It's a beautiful place. Jaylin and Ilgaz needed that, and I'm glad that the show has the funding and support to get to do little side plots like that. But it was so hard to really lead into those little romantic moments that they had, because it was timed so poorly amidst all the other chaos that's going on.
There was a lot of trauma in season two. I mean, season one was no walk in the park, that's for sure, for these characters. But season two, man, every single character went through the ringer. Some didn't make it out alive. It was heavy. It's a heavy show to watch. And on top of that, there were so many loose threads with convenient resolutions or resolutions that didn't feel earned. Sema spends so much time riling the characters up and creating all these traumatic events where the villains so easily get away with what they want to get away with. There was very little payoff with that. With all the long cons that went on, they all had convenient resolutions. And I wasn't okay with that. I think I mentioned many times to you, Maya, that like, there's so much going on. It just didn't feel cohesive. Chaos is the best word I can use. There's so much going on. This person's dying. Ilgaz is in jail. Jaylin's being framed for it. This person's probably dead. Parla thinks she killed this person. There was a lot going on. And I wish they had spent more time wrapping it up versus focusing more on creating the plot problems, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And I think too, if we're going to be bogged down with so much doom and gloom and pain, at least give us some satisfying, meaty conclusion. Let there be consequences instead of introducing yet more plot lines that kind of just run over the end of the old ones and they get pushed aside and dropped off.
Do you remember when Jaylin had Lachin spy on Yekta in the house? For what?
Yeah, there was that, where there were so many little pieces in place, and I was waiting for her to have an in to frame Yekta, because for a second, Lashin was going to take Yekta back, but it was only for Omar, and it was like, where is this strong woman that was built by the end of season one?
Right.
And part of me wonders if Lashin as a spy dropped off because Yekta has moved into a more positive light in the show. But still, there were so many little moving parts that were put in place at the beginning that had so much potential.
Exactly.
That just dropped off, or they spun out into something else that didn't make as much sense. And it was kind of sad.
Right. Yekta especially. He had a journey this season, and I did not expect it.
Yeah. And here's the thing. He's a very complex character. He has been since day one, and that's been great. He's been a very worthy opponent and antagonist for the leads. There are episodes where I hate him so much and how he's got his fingers in everything. And there are many times where I would message Caro, are there no other criminal defense lawyers in Istanbul? Like, how is Yekta glomming on to every single bad person in Ilje's life?
Preferably one that is actually licensed. I'm still not over the fact that they brought up this plot point that Yekta is not a real lawyer. He never got his law degree. They blew up a building to hide that fact, and nothing came of it.
You're like, well, guess we'll never know. And it's like, but we do. Is there nothing? Can he not be investigated in any way?
There is no downfall to Yekta. He just keeps on winning. Hashtag winning. It blows my mind. And that's why this goes into something that the show does not do well, because Sema created an amazing villain in Yekta, and he's an enjoyable villain. Like, we like to hate him. Like, he's so evil. I mean, this season, if you remember, he gives Jaylin an ultimatum, like, do what I want, kill Ilgaz. Do you remember that? He wanted Ilgaz to die at Jaylin's hand and literally blackmailed her.
Because he thought it was funny.
But that was too close to the ending where he's then a part of the squad.
Oh, I know. He had a whole arc this season. And while I'm okay with him staying in the show, he's a worthy opponent.
Mm-hmm.
Even the ending of season one, where he gets taken to prison for this random crime that they've come up with at the very end.
At the very end.
By season two, he's already out. And yes, that's a commentary on justice systems where not all bad people are fully put away behind bars. They have friends in high places. They can weasel their way out. But we still spent a majority of the episode of him being a problem. And then that faded away by the end of the season, where he does almost this 180 of being this old friend to Jaylin, and they've had differences before, but he's going to take care of her. And they frame it as Omar has caused so much damage to everyone. Keep your friends close, put your enemies closer. But even as good as Jaylin and Yekta work together and how weirdly similar they are, it's an uncomfortable dynamic to watch because Yekta still hasn't gotten his. He still hasn't fully experienced consequences for what he's been doing for years before the show's timeline even started. And the thing with Yekta is this idea of redemption. He's such an objectively evil character. His introduction, how Jaylin describes him to Ilgaz in season one is, you know, these businessmen had their way with this woman and threw her off a hotel balcony and Yekta got them off. Like, that's kind of how we learn about Yekta's reputation and the kind of work he does.
Mm-hmm.
And yet enough time passes and suddenly that counts as a redemption. I disagree with that. As much as I love his and Jaylin's back and forth and the fact that they're a duo right now in the short term, in the long term, he still needs to be punished. And I don't know if that's him going to prison forever, which season one kind of nixed as an option. And so is he going to die? But if he dies, he'll be kind of some sort of martyr. It's like, we didn't love him, but he was part of us. Like, I don't know what they're going to do with that, but it just did not work for me.
It's a letdown that he's probably not going to get the downfall that he deserves, given all the pain and suffering that he's caused over the past two seasons.
Exactly.
And then really briefly about Omar, what I didn't like about him as a villain is that I never thought his motive was very clear, even at the end. I still think it was a weak motive that he just kind of disliked Yekta and then decided he liked Jaylin, and because Jaylin rebuffed him, he was gonna make Ilgaz's life miserable. And a lot of things that happened with Omar were luck. He was a successful villain because he was lucky, not because he was this genius mastermind. And that just felt like a really cheap cop-out for what could have been a very cool villain or a cool plotline. Fell flat for me.
Yeah.
But all right, we've talked about the negatives for a bit, which
is hard.
Is hard for you, I know. So let's pivot now to what we liked about the show. For me, always and forever, the Il-Jay relationship remains the almighty supreme. They love each other so much. Pinkan's chemistry is so good. I don't want to live without that. So for me, like, that will always keep me invested in this show.
They're such strong characters. They're such well-written characters. But their relationship together, I said this before, probably on the podcast, but definitely to Caro. I love these, I guess, adult relationships where all of their problems and their relationship issues are legitimate and they're always building off of each other. Mm-hmm. And while I was very hesitant about having a season two when season one was going so well, one thing that was surprising for me is how much I enjoyed Il-Jay having the chance to have their relationship deepen, especially in the beginning half of the season, where we could see their relationship really solidifying both romantically, professionally, and they just got to be married and happy. And I love that.
That was nice to see for the 3 seconds that we got some happy content on the show. And I agree with that. It's still a very well-written show. It's leaps and bounds better, in our opinion, than a lot of other Dizzies out there. Sema is an excellent writer, and she did the best with what she had on her plate. The story is still engaging. So, of course, while it's not up to season one standards, objectively, it is a great show, and it still captivates us, it entertains us, and it literally kept Maya and I engaged for the entire season.
That is a show where I would watch, I mean, most of my favorite shows, I will watch the day they come out, but Sundays, no matter what I was doing, even if I had to wake up super early for work the next day, even if I was working late, if I had to miss it by a day, it was social media lockdown. Yarga episodes have to be savored, they have to be watched with intention. Still the highlight of my week. And while I am emotionally exhausted and glad we're getting a well-deserved summer break, it was definitely a pillar of my week.
Yeah. I miss it. I miss it already. Like, on Mondays, I mean, I wasn't watching it as quickly as you did, but I always made a point to watch it. And on Mondays, knowing that I don't have that to watch makes me sad.
And there are lots of little moments in this show that were really well done. Mm-hmm. That gave me a lot of joy outside of the main couple. Like Aaron and Tuche's relationship growing, and it seems like Aaron got custody over the summer off screen. I really loved their budding relationship. Tuche is the only teen character on the show with a modicum of brain cells. I'm convinced she's going to follow in her father's footsteps and become a police officer and work in cyber crimes. I cannot wait for that. I've decided in my head that that is canon. I love that.
I said this to Maya a while back, and it's very controversial, but I stand by it. I think Chinar's love interest should have been Tuche. Because Parla doesn't challenge Chinar. Parla doesn't make Chinar a better person. Not that he needs a woman to do that for him, but Tuche is so smart. She's the only one of the teen squad, as Maya said, that has any brains. She's just the only one that literally helps problems and tries to resolve them and makes things better. And it would be so great if Chinar tried to earn her love.
It's too late. That could have been great.
It is too late. It is too late. That ship has sailed.
She deserves so much more.
She deserves way more. I get that. But I would have been super invested in a relationship where this absolute screw-up who cannot make a right decision to save his life tries to earn the love and affection of this super smart, budding future cyber crimes officer who just gets things done, solves problems. She's basically the Ilgast. A mini Ilgast and Jaylin, but gender swap.
I love the amount of crap she would give Chinar, where she would be like, why do you keep bringing these creepy dudes around? Why can't you do this?
It could have been so well done, and I know the ship has sailed. I'm not saying I want it to happen given what has happened. I'm just saying if we could go back and rewrite season two, I would have preferred Chinar to be with someone like Tuche, who might actually make him a better person and create some really funny moments where Tuche just gives him a lot of crap and makes fun of him and he just adores her. But instead, we got the wet blanket that is Parla.
Yes. But Aaron and Tuche, amazing.
Amazing.
Tuche, mini Kraliche, mini queen, mm-hmm. The best. Mm-hmm. Something else that surprised me in a good way was Mechen's redemption over this season. I mean, he doesn't have a job. You know, he's not a police chief anymore. Mm-hmm. He was working for Haluk for a while as his driver and security, which made sense. And then when Haluk turned out to be real bad, Mechen chose the light, chose his family. And it even got to a point where he and Jaylen are close again.
Yeah.
I think that was really well done. And it's a way to show how justice can be served even to technically a protagonist.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was really cool that we got to see a form of that. And now even Jaylen Mechen became this very unexpected duo of women's rights and like helping Jaylen's domestic violence and kind of feminist cases with her once
he's basically a consultant.
He really is. He's a consultant for Jaylen. But I just love that that was the team that tackled a lot of the women's rights commentary of the show. And I'm glad for him because I like him too. Like, remember how much we could not stand him and moments in season one where it's like, just be there for your family. Just leave your honor aside for once. I was really glad that he was, one, seemingly appropriately punished, even if it lost him everything, which is his livelihood and his dream job. But it also gave him a path forward to leave him as a protagonist in the show.
Agreed. He was an asset to season two. He didn't annoy us. He didn't overshadow us. He helped the plot move forward. I enjoyed him in season two. It was a nice little redemption arc for him, but like a low-key redemption arc.
Yes, exactly.
But yeah, I mean, overall, I think every single episode was just so well produced. It gave us a lot of fodder for voice message discussions, obviously, which entertain Maya and I endlessly. And overall, it's an excellent watch week to week. I still maintain, as I thought with season one, Yarga is best as a week to week watch versus a binge.
Yeah, those episodes are so jam-packed and so intense. You kind of need a little bit of emotional recovery, even if it's a quote-unquote weaker episode of the show. There's no way they can ever fully disappoint.
Right.
And then, I know we've talked about this in what the show doesn't do well, but there are parts of the episode that we just don't like. And so, let's get into those and get it over with.
Let's do it.
I think the big thing really is Omar, because he had such potential as a narrative device, as a potential villain, as a potential something.
We had high hopes.
We had high hopes. But what ended up happening is that we have this guy where we have so much suspense, like, who is he? Where do his allegiances lie? And his plot ends up being a pretty one-dimensional revenge storyline. It's kind of an incel storyline because Jaylen won't return his random affections. Mm-hmm. And yes, that stuff is important to comment on, you know, especially in context of violence against women and all of these things where men feeling entitled to women's affection, going violent when they don't get it. That's important to talk about and to represent accurately. But it took up too much villain space in this show.
Too much villain space.
Especially since we didn't know what Omar's deal was for most of the season. And to me, that felt like a mistake. And it took out my enjoyment of the show. Because instead of him going on screen and being, oh, I hate him, but I'm excited to see what happens and how they can beat him. It's like, God, it's this guy again.
Right. And what is his motive? Maybe he's a plot point from Jaylen. And maybe he's going to bring down Yekta. No.
That's the thing. My theory for so long was that Omar was planted by Jaylen to mess with Yekta because Lachin introduces him out of the blue. They have this DNA test that Lachin or someone...
That Lachin, yeah.
She'd somehow set it up. The results of the paternity test come from Lachin's hand to Yekta. Who knows if they could have been swapped? My dream scenario was that Omar was some disgruntled person that Jaylen had found, and he was going to get revenge on Yekta too by being this new face in Yekta's world and wowing him. It's like, wow, look how cool my son is, and then they take him down. But instead, he became this one-dimensional but very oppressive villain that even turned Yekta kind of good.
It was unexpected. Agreed.
It could have had so much of potential.
One thing that bothered me to move away from our mutual dislike of Omar was that very specific scene where before Pars died, the squad is at dinner together and Daria had found out that she's pregnant and Jaylen called out to the table announcing Daria's pregnancy when she hadn't even told Pars yet, solely because Daria was considering aborting the baby. And Jaylen is our girl. She's our Kraliche. She's our queen. She is such an important character on the show. And it just seemed out of character for her as a woman, another woman, to turn on her so-called friend. I really didn't like it. It felt very out of the blue. I know it divided the fandom, where some people sided with Jaylin and some people sided with Daria. I was on Team Daria here. I really didn't like that Jaylin did that. It just felt very off for her character to do that, given all the work she does to help women and support women on the show.
Yeah, I really disliked that scene and that arc. And honestly, from both sides, where I agree, yeah, it was very out of character for Jaylin, and it wasn't fair to Daria. And yeah, there's a lot to be said of, you know, what do people think Daria should have to say to Parse before making decisions? Should she have to say anything? And why is Jaylin getting involved in this? But I think the biggest issue for me is how Jaylin took matters into her own hands that way, and how the story made it such a divisive issue when that's not how the characters are. And I think they did a really good job introducing, you know, this isn't Daria's first pregnancy. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of trauma.
A lot of trauma.
Associated with her late husband and with her miscarriage, and she was going through it, but somehow the show turned it into this, like, Jaylin projecting where she wants a baby. And even Ilgaz had this weird comment afterward, like, oh, I wouldn't let you do that. And there are a lot of people like, wow, look at him standing up and loving Jaylin that much. And the whole situation, the way it was executed on the show, felt icky, even though there were so many important discussions that could have been had. Even if they didn't choose to, I don't want to say politically, but politically side either way with the story, I don't like how that was handled. And unfortunately, that plotline has to fizzle afterwards because of Parse, but...
Well, that's what frustrated me so much, and which ties into the loose thread issue we had with the whole season, is that it was a big deal that Jaylin called out something very personal for Daria. I mean, these two were friends. They're part of the squad. They're colleagues. They're friends. And then nothing ever happens after that. I don't know, as Daria, like, do you forgive Jaylin for that? Like, Jaylin never apologized to Daria for, like, even if she still maintained that what she did was right, she could have said, like, I shouldn't have done that. Nothing. It just dropped. Granted, so many other things were happening. I think this was around the time that the earthquake happened in Turkey. Parse left very shortly after. A lot happened, I get that, but it was a big moment to have absolutely no follow-up.
Exactly. Especially since season one, you know, Jaylin didn't really have a lot of girlfriends. I think this duo has been an amazing representation of kind of found girl friendship.
Mm-hmm.
And then later, they have to band back together because of all the other drama. And it was so unfortunate that this was the thing that divided them before. Because, yeah, in real life, can you ever go back from something like that? I don't know if you can. And I'm glad they did for the show's sake. I want them to be friends. They needed each other.
But was it necessary?
No.
I mean, the show would have remained exactly the same. It would have been a little more melancholy and sad and more traumatic because Parse never would have known that he had a baby on the way. But
it just should have been different.
Yeah, agreed.
I think we could have still left that in. Just, I wish it had been executed differently.
Agreed.
Something else that I wish had been executed differently was Chinar and Parla's quote-unquote romance.
Executed differently or not executed at all?
Not executed at all. Oh my god. Okay, first of all, do we remember season one? I hope we do. Does Semo remember season one? Remember when Chinar was in love with Inji, you know, Parla's age-appropriate older aunt who was 20?
That's right. She was her aunt.
Right. So I'm not saying Chinar can never love again, especially since Inji wasn't interested in him that way. And that was a whole thing that we dealt with in season one. Chinar can have another love interest, but why is it this 15, maybe 16-year-old wet blanket of a girl, only because it's his sister-in-law's niece? They don't have anything in common.
Well, they both make bad decisions.
Well, okay, there's that. But in season one, I really enjoyed Parla's unrequited crush on him. I thought that that was a really human element to add to the show of, you know, kind of a teenage crush and like, wow, look at my hot brother-in-law or whatever that makes him. But especially as Caro said earlier, even Tuche could have been a better match for Chinar, though I wouldn't wish that on Tuche.
I wouldn't wish it on Tuche either, but it would have been interesting. And Tuche, even if she's the same age or around the same age as Parla, she's more mature. So it would have fit a little bit better than Parla, who essentially just hasn't matured that much as a person. She's still very juvenile.
Yeah, and she kind of hero worships Chinar because he's apparently some cute boy. And that leaves Chinar no opportunities for growth because he doesn't have to. He gets hero worshipped by this teenager. And again, we don't know exactly how old Chinar is. I think anyone who's been on Twitter as a fandom, we cannot decide. He's got to be between 20 and like 23 ballpark. So why is he around the 16-year-old other than because it kind of seemed like fans cared about it? Cannot stand that.
Yeah, I mean, not to alienate any of our listeners, I didn't see that on Twitter at all. I didn't see anyone really shipping the two of them together. Maybe I just follow different people than that, but...
I mean, it wasn't major from what I saw, but even still, for me, that's not a good enough reason. They can just both be single. There's enough going on already.
There was enough going on. Agreed. It's a big ick. I think Sema really glossed over the age factor because I know you made a big deal about it. And but for you, I don't think I would have really thought about it too much.
It's just so messy. And that age gap, if they both been older, whatever, like, fine. But she's in high school, if she even goes. Like, there's so many scenes, like, do these girls even go to school?
Do they even go to school? I know.
We see them there once in a blue moon.
Mm. When Ayub, like, smokes up the entire place and somehow Parla's unable to escape in a sea of people. Don't even get me started.
It was a lot. And so it was this Chinar Parla, whatever romance was happening. And it took up too much screen time and didn't make sense. Also, what took up so much screen time were all of these random moments of the Ergovans and Marve.
I don't even know her name. Like, literally, I did not know her name.
There's no reason for her to still be in the show.
There is no reason.
I don't know if it's contracts. I mean, I'm sure she's a lovely person to be around and they want to keep her on set.
I'm sure.
But why is she hanging around with these high schoolers? Why doesn't she have a life?
I'm assuming she's like Ali Bilgin's niece or something like that. That's my guess.
But there were so many moments, especially in the latter half of the season, where, like, Ghoul would show up to some random time people were in the hospital. And it was like, I don't know how Turkish talent contracts work. I work with American talent contracts. But there were so many times where we'd have these random scenes that felt solely so we could keep those characters in the show. And we didn't need that. And then Aylin and Osman, they were supposed to get divorced. There was a whole thing. And that kind of fizzled out at the end. And I'm wondering if it's just because they need to do something with both of them next season. But there was so much drama and time-wasting filler with these characters where they just weren't relevant at the time, and yet we still had to see them.
Speaking of Aylin and Osman, I would say a big annoyance for me and something I vehemently did not like was the addition of the character Chetan. I'll die annoyed over him, and Maya has listened to me ad nauseum rant about this character.
I have.
Because he just makes no sense in this season. He was another character similar to Omar where I was like, ooh, who is he? What's his plot point gonna be? Like, something cool is gonna happen with him. And nothing happened with him. I still, like, I'm assuming he's just a con man, but that really wasn't made explicitly clear. I mean, I know he was at the wedding of the bride of the mafia guy that ended up dying, but he just happened upon that wedding. You know, he dates Aylin, which doesn't make a whole lot of sense because she's not wealthy. She doesn't have any real assets that he can grasp at. And he does end up getting the money from her house that she sells, right? But that is pure luck that Parla is a human disaster and Aylin needs the money so Parla can escape Turkey. All of his storyline was too much coincidence, too much luck. Everything would have remained exactly the same if he was not on the show. And I just think he was a waste of my time and I'm mad at Sema for bringing him in.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about the awkward product placements that happened this week?
Oh, God.
In the midst of sadness, tears, chaos, heart-wrenching scenes, the show tried to get you to buy an air fryer.
If all else fails, if we have nothing, we will have the opportunity to buy an air fryer.
That salmon will cook up beautifully.
Here's the thing. I love that Yarga is getting the recognition it deserves. It comes out on top or nearly on top every week. But unfortunately, with that fame comes the opportunity to make more money, which the networks and production companies are clearly exploiting. Now, not to say that they don't deserve what they can get. At the same time, can we not do product placements every time Ilje finally have some happy moments?
Mm-hmm.
And there's been some episodes near the end of the season where it would be feel like four products back to back to back.
Yeah.
It's like this is their only domestic time in the kitchen that they've had in 4 weeks. I don't want to buy cleaning detergent because Yarga characters used it. There was a random like soda placement. I don't want to see this phone app. I mean, it's hard because it doesn't not relevant to me in Turkey, but still too much.
But even the car, they put the placement of Jaylen's new car in the middle. I believe it was when she was trying to get Ilgaz out of jail. And she had a lot going on. I remember messaging you being like, she would realistically never have the time to buy this car. It just wouldn't happen.
Exactly. Or the money.
Or the money.
This is also her second product placement car in two seasons. Right. And it was nice. I mean, I know that she's a strong, independent woman and she'd be able to not rely on rides from her husband. But at the same time, that's something we love about their relationship is the car rides. So having this random super sleek car that even her prosecutor husband isn't splashing out on was too much.
It was very awkward where she's like, oh my God, we're gonna get him out of jail. But thankfully we have this integrated GPS map to help us get there. I'm like, what? It was very obvious. I cringed. It was very ick for me.
I know that there's so much money that goes into making commercials and ads, but couldn't they have just done more product placement like TV ads with Pinar and Khan?
Yeah. Agreed.
Those Dyson ads were very cringy to me, but like, I would rather do that. Or at least give the car to Daria.
Yes.
Give the product placements to other characters. That's fine. Like, if Ghoul has to be messing around just to show up in a scene, can she clean her kitchen with the cleaning detergent?
Mm-hmm. Make it a little more organic. Make it more seamless. It's a very obvious product placement, which makes me cringe. And I don't think I'll ever see a white air fryer now without cringing a little bit. I'm not gonna lie.
I will say, Sen Chalkapami did a really good job of product placements, I feel like especially where Selin would have the Head and Shoulders and they do like a little, oh, I'm getting ready for my wedding, let me do hair care, and they would bang it out in 30 seconds. Product placement done.
It was slightly better, agreed.
So it can be done. They just really leaned into it.
My first foray into it, like, I didn't understand that product placement was a thing that shows capitalized on in Turkey. And I remember watching Erkenzi Kuş, which had, like, really obnoxious product placement. And I remember being like, what is this? Why are they doing this? Like, I was so confused. And then was like, oh, this is, like, a thing shows do. Some shows do it better than others, and it's not on my good list for Yarga.
I think the final thing to talk about for season two is the fact that Pars left the show.
I know.
And it's hard because a lot happened behind the scenes that we as viewers aren't privy to. There were a lot of warring stories coming out of why Mehmet decided to leave.
Yeah.
Ostensibly, it was for health reasons. And if that's the case, we wish him well. Your health is more important than a TV show. But now that Pars is gone, he was such an integral part of the story. And the show won't be the same without him. There's so many plot points riding on him.
Yeah.
I love the dynamic. He was a great friend who had grown so much as a character since we met him.
It always made me so happy to see him with the squad because he was so lonely at the start of season one. And in season two, we saw him in a relationship and, you know, strong friendship bonds with Ilgaz and Eren and... I'm not going to comment on what happened behind the scenes because I certainly don't know. I'm sad that his exit and departure had to happen so fast. In my opinion, the storyline suffered because of it. Obviously, he has to do what's right for him, and I'm not passing judgment on him. I personally just don't like the way it unfolded on the show, and I think it was a loss for the show. Big loss.
Yeah. And not only in terms of the main plot, but there's a lot of Daria's character potential that was wrapped up in him, no matter how much she stands on her own.
I wonder if she would have stayed on the show had Mehmet stayed.
Oh, I'm sure. But bottom line is, that was a hard time. And Sema wrote around it pretty beautifully under the circumstances, but we will miss him.
And I will miss Daria. Like, I'll miss both of them next season. Sema must be thanking her lucky stars that Mehmet was not in the flash forwards of season one.
Yeah. Part of me thinks that he could have been more instrumental in that 6 months later plot.
I'm so curious how it would have played out had he not left the show. Do you ever wonder?
Oh, I wonder so much. But at the same time, I try not to think about it because...
I know. Everything happens for a reason. And, you know, we wish Mehmet well in whatever happened. And it is what it is. And the show must go on.
I know we've touched on it a lot as we've gone on, but let's take a moment and talk about season 2's finale in general, because regardless of all the twists and turns the show took, for better and for worse, like, it's a feat to have finished 2 full-length seasons and it not be the end of a show.
I'm shocked there's gonna be a season 3.
I mean, yeah, I got a lot to say about that. But for the season 2 finale, I just have to say that distraught Jaylen is the best Jaylen. As much as I want her character to be happy, Pinar plays grief and emotional angst so well.
Oh my god, I have never seen anything like it. She brought it for that finale.
And it was the appropriate level of pain and suffering portrayed for the potential loss of a character like Ilgaz. That's her person. He's the best man in general. And, you know, she didn't get to say goodbye. Something terrible happened. She didn't get to go to his funeral, which I think was the most well done and tragic angle they could have taken with Jaylen being behind bars during that time.
Especially given the tradition of, like, helping your loved one that's passed on. What is it? They throw the dirt. They help, like, drop...
They lay flowers.
Yeah.
They get to say their final goodbyes and kind of give him to the earth. So good. Just thank you, Pinar.
When she was flipping out in the interrogation room, I was stunned. Like, you can't help but just watch in awe. I don't know how she did it. I don't know how she reached those levels. It was almost a psychotic break that the character was having, because she lost her mind, and I can't say enough about it. Like, Pinar deserves all the awards.
She does. One thing about the season 2 finale is that it mimics the season 1 finale in that it had a pretty quick resolution for the amount of buildup that this plot had. I wish that the finale had been more than one episode. There was so much that happened in the last third of it.
Yeah.
And it was a culmination of so much. And I guess maybe because they didn't know until last minute when their exact final episode for the season would be, and it took them a long time to announce that there would be a third season, so I'm sure that changed exactly how they were gonna end it, but it felt pretty rushed.
Right. I agree with that. Also, a lot of things kind of happened off screen, like the Turgut Ali suicide. I did like that he at least got the retribution that he deserved, given all the misery that he caused.
Yeah, and it was definitely sad because he was clearly being used and he was backed into a corner.
Right.
And it was nice that they let his daughter escape. They're not going to blame her father's mistakes on her getting treatment.
Mm-hmm.
But it was very fast.
Right. But, I mean, for the most part, the episode focused very closely on Jaylen. It was mostly her point of view, which was fantastic. I liked how they brought in, like, the Ilgaz hallucinations, which, A, got Khan on the episode, because otherwise he wouldn't have had a very big part. But also, it really led to that. I think we actually both agree that Ilgaz is not dead, but the hallucinations leave a question mark. It's not 100%.
I disagree with you. Like, I love the hallucinations because we as viewers didn't know when it would happen. But I've been convinced since season 1 that he's not dead. It makes no sense for Ilgaz to be dead, especially with their dynamic. Neither of them can survive without the other. So if one of them is gonna die, it's gonna be both of them or neither.
I have seen enough Dizzies that end tragically, where if this were going to be the final season, in my opinion, I think it would be very plausible that Ilgaz could die. Now that there's a season 3, I am firmly convinced that you are correct and he is not dead.
I feel like regardless, he wouldn't have died, but carry on.
I still think there's so many questions regarding how it ended, because what I'm unclear about is, assuming Ilgaz is alive and he's in hiding, why would Eren drop Jaylen off there, not tell her, and then just hope that they run into each other on the street? What if she never left the hotel room? What if she was crying too hard and just stayed in bed the whole time?
Yeah, there is definitely the question of, one, who is in on the fact that Ilgaz is alive? Clearly Eren. There's no question to me. And maybe Anil, the forensics tech, at minimum.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, and it's also so hard. Like, I understand why he has to be dead if the higher ups in the government are like, well, this is our chance to A, keep people safe, and B, really hone in on this mafia problem that we've been having. But the fact that so many people had to stay in the dark, even Daphne, it's heartbreaking that she thinks Ogaz is dead.
I know.
But for Jaylen, like, I understand at the beginning why Jaylen couldn't know. She's too volatile. She would blow Ogaz's cover in order to get to him. She would not care if she wanted to take care of him. And Ogaz did say much earlier on in, I don't remember if it was this season or last season, where he would lie to Jaylen to protect her. So it made sense. But just dropping her off on what would have been their romantic vacation with no warning and her grief after a couple of days was very risky on Eren's part.
It just doesn't make sense. If he dropped her off in hopes that Ogaz was going to find her, or they would find each other, he should have told her on the drive there. If he didn't want them to meet up, he should have dropped her off at a different location for her rest.
Right.
That's where it doesn't make sense to me. And I don't think I'm going to get the answers that I'm looking for at the start of season three, and I'm just going to have to deal with it, but that's fine.
Another surprising moment at the very end of the finale is the fact that randomly Jaylen and Ogaz have always planned on getting a puppy, which I know a lot of people enjoyed as a plot point, but I do not.
As someone who has a year and a half old dog, I can tell you, a puppy is a lot of work. And not for nothing, but Jaylen is a very busy girl. If she's not arrested and in jail, she is running around town trying to help her clients or help Ogaz or make life more difficult for Ogaz. Like, she is not someone who can stay home and take care of a puppy. Logistically, no. These two people should not have a puppy. Give the puppy to Daphne. Daphne can take care of the puppy.
Even still, it just feels a little too white picket fence. It just doesn't feel like that kind of story.
They're not that type of couple.
They're really not.
They're an air fryer kind of couple. They're not a puppy couple.
That was hard. So if people like that plot, good for them. But also just the logistics of having a puppy and a dog on set. Like, I work on set. There's so many factors you already have to consider. Let's not add animals into the mix. Let's not.
I honestly think they're going to give it to Daphne or someone. Like, it's not going to be part of season three. I can't see that. I think it was a cute way to, like, end it. Like, oh, look, sorry, we just ripped your heart out for the past 20-some-odd episodes. Here's a puppy.
Yeah. One thing I did love about the finale is that they shot in Alachate, which is this resort-type town. It used to be a Greek town hundreds and hundreds of years ago. Very picturesque kind of resort area, somewhat near the sea. I know a lot of people will go there to vacation in Turkey, and that is a place that I went to when I was in Turkey. And the streets that Jaylen's walking around and where she and Ogaz have their reunion, which is tragic and a little bit questionable because I don't know why Ogaz didn't run to her, but those moments are happening like a block from where I stayed when I was there, and I thought that was really cool.
That is cool. I love that.
But that reunion, I mean, if nothing else, it was angsty enough for what.
And don't forget the big reveal, too.
The big reveal is that Jaylen and Ogaz will finally have their much longed for and discussed baby.
They're having a baby. Also something that Jaylen probably doesn't have time for, but it is what it is.
I would rather them have a baby.
I would rather them have a baby, too, yes.
It was only a matter of time. They both really want kids. It's gonna make them so happy, and it makes me very happy for them.
And Khan loves babies and children so much, it would not surprise me if he was like, listen, I'll do season three, but I'm gonna need a little kid to hang out with. He is so adorable. Watching Kara Sevda, he's just the worst character. And then you watch these behind the scenes clips where Khan is just having the best time with the actress that plays his daughter. I was like, oh my god, he's an absolute cinnamon roll. Like, I love this man, and he's the worst villain of all time. It warms my heart. I'm looking forward to it. Good for Khan. Good for that baby, because they're gonna have the best time on set.
Honestly.
Do you want to talk a little bit, as we wrap up, about our season three hopes and dreams and predictions?
Yes. So we found out a couple weeks before the finale that season 3 is in the works.
I remember texting it to you. I think I broke the news to you.
You did break the news to me, and I don't know if it's better. It is, actually. I wasn't sure. I was like, is it better that Carol's the one to tell me and I don't find out from the internet? Probably. Here's the thing. Not to rain on everyone's parade, but I'm going to, because it's who I am as a person when it comes to TV shows.
Welcome and things. To being friends with Maya.
I've always been like this for things that I love. Here's my thing. For me and the stories I love, less is always more in terms of length. For me, I would rather a story end organically and intentionally and when the plot is over and we're super excited about it than have a show run on and fizzle out into nothingness because the creators have milked the story dry. Sometimes stories are over. I love Jaylen and Ilgaz on screen. They're the highlight of my week. Yarga is my favorite Dizzy. It's probably top three of my favorite TV shows in general. But I want it to end because I'm so attached to how good it is and how well made it is and how relevant and important the plots are that the more they drag things on, the farther it can fall before it finally ends. And that's hard when it's so successful. I was like this about season 2, don't get me wrong. And there were moments of season 2 that I really enjoyed. I'm glad that we got to deepen our understanding of a lot of the characters. But when a show just runs on and on, things like Parse having to leave happens, where for whatever reason Mehmet had to leave the show and there's no end in sight for these things. Also, there's just so many plot points that are over, and so adding new things will change the show in ways that maybe don't make as much sense anymore. So while I'm happy for the success of the show and I hope that season 3 treats the story well, and I'm glad that our actors have jobs on a project they love, but I really hope that season 3 is the last one. It needs to be the last one. I wish it wasn't happening, but it is. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, we're on the same page here. I just think season 2 was so tragic and so sad, and there was a lot of trauma that occurred. I don't want another season of that. I love these characters too much. I love the protagonist too much to have them suffer for a whole other season. So my hope for season 3 is that they shift things a little bit. I'd even be okay with it being more procedural and less plots that directly affect the daily lives, livelihoods, and aliveness of each character.
I mean, I don't want it to be procedural. Like, that's why I'd rather it end.
I know.
Because I love when they have the big plots. I love watching them work together. I love the high stakes. But we don't have enough characters left for them to keep killing people, you know? Like,
well, that's the thing. Like, I'd be okay with plots like the wedding night murder, but let's just focus on them going after the mafia and not have the mafia, you know, kidnap Ilgaz or kidnap Defne. Like, these characters can't keep going through this. There's not enough therapists in Istanbul to help them overcome the trauma they've already experienced. Never mind what's going to happen in season 3.
Yeah.
But I agree with you. I love these characters. I love the show. I don't want to stop watching it. I don't want them to go through what they went through in season 2. But I am excited about some things, you know, like I'm excited to see them again. I'm excited to see Iljay as a family. I'm really curious to see if Omar and Ayub are going to be in the new season. I hope not. I'd also be okay if Parla goes off to school or her and Chinar run away together. That's fine. They don't need to be in season 3.
Yeah, I'm done with Parla. You mentioned that you would be interested in a potential time jump.
Yeah, I do. I hope there's a time jump.
I'm very curious. I don't know how I feel about that, but at the same time, Yarga makes us watch every single day that these characters live through with the odd random 2-week time jump. So I'd be very curious if there's a time jump, how that gets handled.
But I also think they need to explain what the heck happened with Ilgaz.
Yeah, my feeling is that we'll pick up where we left off and we'll go through Jaylen's pregnancy as long as she's not showing. And then the hopeful series finale will jump ahead to them having a family, which feels like that's what would happen. But who knows?
But if they have a baby in season 3, that's a new person that Sema can have kidnapped. There's only so many times that Urguvans can get kidnapped.
Defne has been through enough. Let's leave her alone. Defne has been through
enough. Let the girl be in therapy and thrive. But I guess we'll just have to wait until fall to see what happens.
Honestly, it'll be a whole new order. Maybe Iljay will be in hiding. There's going to be a pregnancy. I don't know if we'll see during or after. Aaron is acting police chief, so well deserved. He should have been that for a long time. So it'd be really curious to see how Yarga fundamentally changes.
Agreed. And I'm sure we'll discuss it a year from now on our podcast episode on season 3.
We better. We gotta process the show somehow.
We have to process the trauma that we've all experienced. It's our trauma bond.
Honestly.
And that concludes the episode. Thank you guys for listening. If you have any thoughts, suggestions, corrections, or any other messages, you can email us at dizzybreakdownpod@gmail.com.
The show's Instagram and Twitter handles are both at dizzybreakdown. And for our personal Twitters, you can find Caro at Caro Gables and myself, Maya, at The Scorpio Racer.
And you can rate and review us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or whichever platform you listen on to help new listeners find us.
So, until next time,
thanks for listening.